Welcome to Variant Frequencies. Month to month, our podcast brings you fiction stories from a different channel. Sci-fi, fantasy, horror, and some odd bands in between. Visit us at www.variantfrequencies.com.
Hello, I'm Rick Stringer. We have a special episode for you. 3 years ago, we ran our first story. That story was Another Man's Run by Matt Wallace. It is hard to believe that Variant Frequencies has been going so long. When we first started, this podcast was intended to be a showcase of the writing by Matt Wallace and Ann Stringer. Over those 3 years, it has evolved into a three-time Parsec Award-winning anthology, featuring many different authors. In the beginning, we had no idea what to expect from Variant Frequencies. Podcasting was still pretty new, and there were very few podcasts that did fiction stories. Now, there are many great podcasts out there that do that. Variant Frequencies has done exactly what we wanted it to do. Matt and Ann's work has received excellent reviews. They both have published work. Matt's book, The Next Fix, is an anthology of stories that have mostly appeared in this podcast. Some of his stories have even been purchased for film production. There'll be more on that in the future. Our story today is by an author that many of our listeners will be familiar with. It is written by Jack Mangan. Jack is the host of Jack Mangan's Deadpan Podcast, and his Spherical Tommy was the first number one title at patiobooks.com. We have an all-star cast for this one. Besides myself, we have Heather Welliver, Craig Stepp, John Smarr, and the one and only Matt Wallace. But that's not all. We have cameo appearances by J.C. Hutchins, Chris Lester, Seth Harwood, Neil Stringer, and New York Times best-selling author Scott Sigler. I want to take a moment and say congratulations to Scott for his achievement of making the New York Times bestseller list. That is so amazing. Scott is showing the power of giving away your work on podcasts, and I'm confident that many more podcasting authors will get there too. There is one thing that we would like to ask of you. Variant Frequencies has had a fantastic 3 years. This year, we want to take it to the next level. One way that we can do that is to get more notice on iTunes. We would love it if you would take the time to comment about Variant Frequencies on iTunes. The comments that we have are excellent. We just need more. Thanks. Now, on to our story. Creature of God by Jack Mangan. A botched deal. A quietly menacing, unholy, fatherly crime boss. A waking nightmare of small-time criminals. Gothic bars. And neon churches. Johnny finds himself immersed in a dark, sinister underworld, struggling desperately to hold on as his humanity slips away. Creature of God by Jack Mangan. She touched the head to her tongue, felt its slight electrical charge.
This battery's good,
she whispered, tossing it to me. I nodded and clicked it into the compartment, then shone the laser sight's red dot on the ground. Her jaw clenched. It was time. We stepped out from behind the Ryder truck and walked purposefully toward the hangar. Margot kept her .45 holstered, but displayed openly on her left hip. I carried the sniper rifle in my hands.
Like I said, the deal should go nice and smooth. The guns are just a formality. Without him, he don't take us serious.
Just as I did during most of our disputes at home. I nodded agreement rather than express my true feelings. It rarely did any good anyway, and this was hardly the time for an argument. A figure stepped out into the open hangar doorway. He'd cultivated a number of thug stereotypes. Shock of white blonde hair, mirrored sunglasses, dull tie. Black suit that seemed to grow directly out of the darkness of the hangar. The unpaved yard was a vast opened expanse, dimly lit and sparsely decorated with rusted forklift carcasses. Loose gravel crunched under our feet as we approached. My eyes darted everywhere, sensing other presences but seeing no one. Margot stopped us at a distance of 20 yards.
You alone?
Alone as a corpse,
the man replied. Relaxed smile, slight southern accent.
Wait there, Margot. The gentleman will come to see me.
My anger hissed upward like steam above a kettle. That wasn't the arrangement.
Either we do things the way I dictate, or I'll drive away with your feet tied to my bumper.
I gripped my rifle's handle, but Margot shook her head. I don't like changes in the deal, and I don't like being threatened, I muttered for her ears alone.
Go ahead. It'll be all right.
I sighed, but said nothing, letting him see my gun barrel's silent O. I began the lone approach. He watched me cross the 60 feet, his smile slightly more visible, his outline melding into the cola-dark gloom of the hangar. The red laser dot danced and bobbed on his torso as I drew nearer. I stopped abruptly, with the forward sight nearly touching his tie, letting my feet kick forward a dust storm of gravel. He ignored the gesture, and apparently, so did his clothes. The dirt seemed to refuse to cling to him. His pants and expensive shoes looked as clean and impeccable as they would at his wake.
That's impeding our business here,
he said, inclining his head at my rifle. A number of hard-ass, sub-witty replies came to mind. But I could hear Margot's voice in my head, telling me to just cooperate, goddammit. 3 seconds of stalemate followed. The air as charged as a playground slide. With a sigh, I let the rifle relax. The moment my gun was lowered, he drew a heavy pistol from within his jacket and fired 2 fast shots over my shoulder. The flurry of sudden movements and noise dazzled me, caught me completely off guard. My tinnitus screamed at the high decibel cracks. I staggered slightly, chanced a quick look behind me to see Margot on her back in the dirt, not moving. I raised my gun again, but Blondie caught its barrel in his strong left grip. With his right hand, he smashed his pistol hard into my knuckles, and the rifle went skidding across the gravel. I managed to swing my fist out and up into his chin. Could hear the sickening, satisfying click of teeth snapping together. As he staggered back, I grunted and hit his chest with my shoulder, tackling him hard to the ground. I quickly had his torso pinned beneath my legs, punching wildly at his face with feral rage. He struggled to break free, but my hold was too secure. His hands came up for counterstrikes. He could muster no leverage, and his weak cuffs were easily parried. But no matter how many blows I struck, not a drop of blood appeared. I landed hits that would have rebroken a boxer's nose, shattered any other man's front teeth. But he seemed to absorb them with indifference. I broke the light lens of his sunglasses, exposing a cold, mud-brown iris beneath. But the only apparent injury was to my lacerated knuckles. Hell, his pretty blonde hair wasn't even getting dirty. I don't know how long this went on. It ended abruptly with a pinpoint pain in my lower back. The sharp sting was so unexpected, so out of place, that it took a moment for me to acknowledge. I reached around and felt something solid yet feathery protruding from my backside, like a dart. I tried to pull it out, but my fingers were suddenly unable to grip anything. I was distantly aware of the blonde man tossing me, of lying me on my back in the dirt. He was hunched over me now, his face uncomfortably close to mine, his exhalations not warm but icy, cold on my skin.
A tranquilizer dart, Johnny boy,
he said, his one eye boring into me through the rim of his ruined sunglasses.
You were correct when you sensed that we were not alone.
I could muster no response. That dark eye grew and morphed into a great yawning mouth, stretching wide to devour me. I awoke to white gospel music and engine hum, strapped into the powder blue front seat of an early 60s Cadillac. It was raining, and still dark outside. Other than the safety belt, I had no restraints.
Welcome back to consciousness. Yeah.
A manila folder was tossed into my lap. I opened it, and saw a small stack of pictures. Polaroids and black and whites. All of Margot in various stages of negotiations and other activities in a motel room with the man I'd just fought at the hangar. The same man who sat in the driver's seat right now. Blondie. The dashboard glow reflected in his flawless mirror shades, identical to the ones I'd ruined. I spun quickly to look into the cavernous back seat, certain that someone else was in the car. But there was no one. It was just me and him.
She set you up. The original deal was for me to shoot you and leave you in that box inside that old building. She and I were going to keep the cash and fence the goods elsewhere.
I looked at the pictures, one in particular, feeling all of the negative reactions boiling inside me. I punched him hard again, squarely across the jaw. The car swerved a bit on the highway, but otherwise the man betrayed no reaction. He remained seated face forward, hands at 10-2 on the wheel. I wanted to hit him again, but felt too groggy and tired. So why did you shoot her instead? My welch on the deal you guys had.
I received a different set of orders from above, or below, depending on your point of view. My employer has taken an interest in you, Johnny.
How fucking special I feel. Who is your employer? And what does he want with me?
We're on our way to see him now. With luck, you'll soon find out why he's chosen you.
His grin was downright creepy.
And you can call me Belial.
I'm not gonna call you anything, I muttered, closing my eyes. Asshole. The woman on the radio crooned that my salvation lay in Jesus Christ. I'd never before seen a bar with stained glass windows. A small battered sign proclaimed it's Evil Eddie's Bar. Every parking space was taken, so Belial pulled the caddy into a patch of grass at the lot's edge, and we ran through the rain to get inside. Lightning punctuated a thunderclap as we crossed the threshold. I was utterly soaked, but wasn't surprised to see Belial looking dry and neatly groomed. The place was empty, and nearly as dimly lit as the hangar had been. It seemed that they had the same radio station on in here that Belial had been playing in the car. The unmanned bar occupied the entire left wall of the first room, half-full bottles and mugs on its surface in front of unoccupied stools. At the far end, a row of caramel-colored shots were lined up, waiting to be drunk. Belial nodded to the bar as he walked past it, entering into the alcove for the men's and ladies' rooms. He looked up to indicate that I should follow. The bathroom had a bank of filthy urinals in the left and two stalls to the right. Underneath the second stall, a woman's legs were visible, knees on the floor before a pair of men's jeans and black boots. I frowned, looking at the woman's khaki pants and tan sneakers. They were exactly the same as the ones Margot had worn to her shooting. Belial and I stood for a few moments, the room utterly silent. I felt as if my anger was being teased toward climax. The moment I'd decided enough already, and resolved to walk up and kick the stall open, to demand some answers. Belial hit me. Unprovoked, unexpected, just a sudden impact of knuckles upon my chin. I stumbled into a sink, rubbing my jaw and staring back at the big Aryan.
I owed you that one,
he said, grinning under his sunglasses. I took my weight off the cracked porcelain, balled my fists. The stall door swung open with a screech, and a tall, repugnantly handsome man stepped out. His neat, casual dress clearly marked him as Belial's boss. Red-black flannel tucked into blue jeans, brown leather belt lining the border. All dynamics, all psyches, all atmospheres, all certainties, all confidences, all faiths, all intentions, withered and vanished in his presence. Belial and I had been about to indulge in a fete of violence and extracted blood. I now felt like an embarrassed schoolchild caught misbehaving by the principal.
Hello, Johnny. Welcome.
He stuck out his hand for me to shake. I paused, taken aback. A hideously detailed tattoo of a vein-stricken leather-brown eye canvassed his right palm. But that was not the horror. A smear of blood, like stigmata tears, trickled down to his wrist. My glance darted back to the gap beneath the wall's stall, where he'd just been. But the woman's legs were no longer visible there. The slightest trace of impatience touched his face. Cold, liquid fear poured into me like wet cement. I steeled myself and returned the handshake. The momentary tension abandoned his features, and he smiled a warm, avuncular smile.
Come, let's go have a drink.
I sneaked a quick glance at my hand as we exited the dingy bathroom. No trace of red. The barroom was still as deserted as a bomb scare. He led us to a dimly lit booth in the corner. Each of us sat down before tall glasses filled with some black fluid.
To Johnny,
the man said, raising his glass and draining it. Belial followed suit, and I reluctantly did the same, taking the tiniest sip from my glass. It was Pepsi.
You're gonna like being one of mine, Johnny boy.
I was barely aware of my own helplessness, succumbing to the awe that his presence inspired. But some final reserve of defiance screamed out from my core. Your thug killed my girlfriend. Why the fuck would I ever work for you? The man looked at me blankly for a few seconds, then burst into laughter. Belial chuckled appeasingly, but I just sipped my flat cola, waiting.
Okay. You're going to accompany Brother Belial here to a meeting in Endtown. A couple of gentlemen there call themselves the Bad Feelings, apparently desperate to contact me. It should just be a simple conversation, a transaction of words and facts, nothing more.
I knew that I'd do exactly as he'd said, but he still must have interpreted some trace of hesitation in my face.
Johnny, you're mine now. Surely you can feel that. You're a part of my grand machine, a cell in my bloodstream. But don't worry, don't worry. I treat my boys real good. You need money? A new car? A new woman? One who won't betray you? I'll get you whatever you need.
Something in his gentle tone touched me, steadied me. I'd long ago shattered the mirror that reflected upon my psyche, hung draperies of denial in its place, no longer willing to look inward and see my forsaken soul. But through his soothing, fatherly words and acceptance, he'd made accessible a new lens, one which offered a fresh view of myself. And for the first time in years, decades, it felt safe to look inside. My inner landscape of surrendered virtue, of drought-starved, corrupted morality, had been unchanged by time. Had likely even degenerated further from the years of neglect. But somehow, through this scope of his presence, it looked righteous. My compromised soul appeared wholesome and correct, honest and good. A tear escaped down my cheek. The man looked across and gripped my fingers in his tattooed right hand.
Go with Brother Belial to Endtown, and forgive him his trespass against you, son. His actions were to your benefit, after all. The bitch had set you up to die.
A ghastly orange twilight flickered in, tainted the color of my soul's landscape, like the sudden tint failure of an old television. The man reiterated.
She'd conspired to kill you for a few $100. Direct away your anger at your brother. Rather, aim it at her memory.
I nodded in agreement, in spite of my true feelings. An hour later, I was back in the caddy's passenger seat, listening to twangy gospel music while Belial drove us south. I'd been unconscious and groggy for most of the ride to Evil Eddie's. But this time, I made sure to memorize the twisted directions to the interstate. He only tried once to spark up conversation. I ignored him and closed my eyes. I woke to the rumbling transition of tires from pavement to the netted steel surface of a bridge. Dawn had recently begun to establish its presence in the east. We passed over some kind of marshy wetland, driving into the heart of some factory zone. Belial pressed us past the mills and the stacks, leading us inevitably to the dingiest and most decrepit of the abandoned factories. A few drops of rain hit the dry windshield as soon as we stopped. I felt a presence again behind me in the Cadillac, but a quick look back showed the seat still empty. I saw that the front flank of the storm had followed us south and was about to lay siege on the land where we had stopped. The downpour began in earnest as we ran across the lot into the building's open truck bay. Again, I was soaked. Belial was perfection.
We are a few minutes early. The bad feeling boys should be here shortly.
I'm unarmed, I said, looking around the loading area. I'm gonna need a gun, he smirked.
Not gonna be that kind of a meeting, brother. The man told you, it's just a friendly conversation.
Seen lots of friendly conversations turn bloody real quick. I ain't standing here without something to protect myself if these guys turn hostile. I stared right into his sunglasses. He seemed to be considering my words. And he sighed and pulled a .45 from his shoulder holster, the same he'd used to shoot down Margo. He handed it to me.
Trust me, there's no reason to use the...
I interrupted him by placing the gun against his forehead. Tight trigger on a .45. The report of the shot echoed loudly throughout the loading bay. Belial's head whipped back from the blow. He staggered a step, then stood looking at me. Powder burns, broken sunglasses, and a look of surprise on his face. It was an awkward moment. I shot him again in his cheek, and again between the eyes. He staggered again, but still remained standing. The bullets ripped holes, but I was alarmed and terrified at the utter lack of blood. It took one more shot to the temple to finally fell him. I exhaled a relieved sigh as he slumped to the ground and didn't move. I stood over him, watching closely for motion, preparing to pump more shots into him, when I noticed them. There were six. They'd entered stealthily and circled us. I had no idea how long they'd been there, or how much they'd seen. Each of them wore bad ties and white shirts, like waiters at a diner. Each aimed a weapon directly at me.
Greetings.
We are the bad feelings.
You and Belial had a disagreement?
He killed someone precious to me.
Is he dead?
I bent down and touched his cold neck. Felt no pulse. I wondered if he'd have felt like that before I shot him. As I began to stand, I noticed that he had another pistol tucked into a second shoulder holster. He's dead, I said, standing fully upright.
Dornan.
I see the dangerous idea spinning in your mind.
But you fired four shots.
That gun in your hand only holds six.
Not enough bullets for all of us.
Kill two. The other four will kill you.
So drop your gun.
Deliver our message to your master.
Just as Belial was sent here to do.
I kept the gun pointed downward, held up my left hand. Okay, you guys are getting on my nerves. Please, have one guy do the talking. The rest of you, shut up. The one standing at 2 o'clock from me spoke.
Here is the message we wish you to convey to your master.
Father Vitor of St. Joseph's Church is the anointed.
The man prophesies to blind the eye.
The priest cannot be allowed to live. Understand?
You must memorize this message word for word.
Repeat it exactly as we dictate it to you.
I shook my head in disgust. Okay, I asked nicely. I shot the one at 9 o'clock from me, then fired across at midnight. The other four returned fire, but their bullets whizzed overhead as I dropped to the floor. 2 o'clock and 8 o'clock managed to shoot each other in the crossfire. I scooped out Belial's backup pistol and shot down the remaining two. One of them managed to squeeze off a second shot at me, but his bullet dug into Belial's body, missing me by a matter of inches. I stood up in a hurry and emptied the second pistol into the bad feelings who were still moving. Trembling with fear and adrenaline, I left them all in the stillness of the abandoned mill and drove the Cadillac back to the interstate. The windshield wipers were barely effective against the torrential rains. I made only two stops, the liquor store and the motel. It was in the dingy solitude of my room that I noticed the neat, clean hole in my chest, ringed in black scorches. One of the bad feelings bullets had indeed found me during the shootout, though I'd felt nothing. After a difficult, yet alarmingly painless self-surgery, the stubbed head was extracted from its crater. No blood spilled from the wound. ...3 a.m. It had been 2 days since the slaughter of the bad feelings. 2 nights of his face in my nightmares. That tattooed hand caressing my face, staining my skin, causing me to wake in terror and sweat. I sat up in the darkness, imagining that I'd just heard his rumbling voice, and felt gaping emptiness in its absence. He hadn't sounded angry at my betrayal or desertion. No words were discernible at all, only his fatherly, reassuring tone. But then I woke, and he was gone. I sat on the bed and wept, feeling utterly alone in the motel room, listening for his voice, but hearing only the sounds of the rain and the distant thunder. Finally, I rubbed my eyes and switched on the television, curious to see if late-night CNN could tell me when the rain would abate, or even to see if the bad feelings had been found, and if their slaying had made it to national news. All 13 channels were static. I was about to turn the set back off when I noticed a shape beginning to emerge within the dead image. I realized that what I'd thought to be white noise from the TV speaker was actually the sound of running water. Listening more closely, I also detected the mingled click-clack of a train passing nearby. The shape lurched forward suddenly, distorting the static, seeming to stretch it as if breaking through a web. The fabric of the static suddenly seemed to give, and something dark broke through. It was him. He blinked and leered, seemingly scanning the room. His gaze hadn't yet landed on me. I switched the TV off and scooped up my clothes from the floor. The TV turned itself on again, back to the undulating static wall. I grabbed as many of the remaining Bud cans as I could carry out to the car and sped away from the motel, blowing north on the interstate. I got ammo for my guns and a burrito at Walmart, then found a secluded place to park the caddy and sleep. The sun was getting ready to punch out for the day when I awoke. It was fully dark, 45 minutes later, as I was pulling into Evil Eddie's parking lot. Again, every painted space was taken. Light from within illuminated the building's stained glass windows. This time, the inside was just as crowded as the lot. Every bar stool, every seat at the tables and booths was occupied. Every collar blue or scented with cheap perfume. Liver spots and yellowed teeth. A thick, hairless bartender worked to maintain the flow of booze, grinning as he pulled the taps and filled the shot glasses. The jukebox's low current of organ-heavy, crackling age vinyl Delta blues defined the atmosphere. A ceiling fan spun lazily, bathing me in its warm, humid breeze. The air smelled stale, stagnant, impure. No one looked directly at me, but I could feel the sidelong glances from all sides. I caught many gazes flickering away as I scanned the place. No familiar faces. I headed back to the men's room.
Told my I ain't got
a toothless old-timer had quite a scare when I kicked open his toilet door, but there was no sign of the man anywhere. Cursing to myself, I went back out into the bar proper. The thick bartender stared at me as I approached. I pointed to a bottle and crossed myself as he poured its contents into a glass for me. As soon as the bourbon touched the rim, I shot two holes in his chest. The whiskey scorched down my throat. I turned around to an audience of staring faces. My guns began firing. What followed was a sort of blackout. I came to walking along a semi-paved side road, vaguely aware that I was following the sound of a church bell. All that noise at whatever late hour this was. I held a half-empty Bud can in my left hand. The tolling eventually led me to a humble one-floor structure, with a brass bell swinging in its lone central tower. There was no stained glass. Only dull neon images of crucified Jesus in the windows. White paint flaked on its beveled wood siding. A weathered sign staked into the grass read, St. Joseph's Church of Jesus C. Christ, the Savior. I climbed the steps and was about to enter when I noticed the stain on my right hand. There were only the slightest traces of red on my clothes, and my left hand was spotless. It was mainly on my right. Rivulets of blood trickled down to the wrist, exactly mimicking the man's tattoo. Through the thin coating of blood on my palm, I thought I could see the outline of an eye. Jesus fucking Christ! I kicked open the church door, immediately spotted the holy water bowls to my left and right. I stumbled to the right, immersed my red-smeared hand into the basin. The water darkened, and to my alarm, began to steam. Then the burning sensation set in, ravaging my skin up to where the wrist emerged from the murky red fluid. The intense pain forced tears from my eyes, but I gritted my teeth and swished my hand around until finally all of the tainted holy water had evaporated. I held my throbbing right hand over the empty basin. It was wet, but seemingly clean. My palm was a blank slate of wrinkles again. No blood or tattoos. There was a sudden rustling noise from somewhere. I looked up just in time to see the skirts of a priest's robe entering the church's confessional. I gulped down the rest of my beer and entered the booth through the other door. Bless me, Father, for I have sinned.
Sounds tragic. Go say some fucking Hail Marys.
I sat in startled silence, forming questions, but not speaking them. The priest said nothing more, though his outline was still visible through the patterned screen. I heard the flick of a lighter, smelled faint cigarette smoke. With a defeated sigh, I left the booth and headed for the front doors. I stopped at the other basin and began to scoop up holy water into my emptied beer can.
Hey, don't tank that,
came the priest's voice from behind me. He'd emerged again from the confessional cocoon, the cigarette clinging precariously to his lip. I looked over at the red-stained basin, then back at him. Look, this may sound a little strange, but I seem to have gotten myself mixed up in something bad. Something evil. I'm going off now to fight this man. Devil. Demon. Witch. Hell, I don't know what he is. But I think I'm going to need this. Sorry. I gestured with the beer can.
You'll need much more than that to face him, my son.
Father Vitor. He nodded and walked toward me.
Your coming here was no accident, Johnny.
The bad feeling said that you're the prophecy.
Yeah, I know. I've never felt confident that I could do it alone. Just been waiting for them to send you here.
So you'll come with me to Evil Eddie's? Vitor shook his head and stubbed out his cigarette in the holy water basin.
He lives under the viaduct at the edge of town. That's where we'll find him. We can walk to it from here, but do as I fucking say, at all times, or we'll both end up far worse than dead.
Aren't you a little foul-mouthed for a priest? We walked for a while through midnight's teeming mist, traversing unpaved roads and sometimes directly through damp thickets of trees. Finally, we emerged from someone's wooded backyard into a large clearing. By now, the mist had graduated into an aggressive downpour, the rain spurring on the fast-flowing river that bordered the field to the west. A railroad track lined the hilltop at the far southern edge, eventually reaching an architecturally Gothic viaduct across the water. The place appeared deserted, but I knew he was here. Father Vitor and I continued to walk through the tall grass, pressing on toward the bridge. The structure seemed to loom larger and larger overhead as we approached. Eventually, the tall growth gave way to patches of wet clay and brush adjacent the riverbank. The cold rain soaked me relentlessly, plastering my hair to my head and sinking my feet into the muddy earth. I looked up just in time to see him step out of a shadow from beneath the railroad bridge. He smiled at the father and me. We closed to a distance of about 20 feet and everyone stopped. I tried unsuccessfully to keep the holy beer can from trembling in my grip. Conceding all initiative, I said fuck it, and drew the gun in my other hand. I'd walked away from Evil Eddie's bar with 2 bullets left, enough for us both. The man seemed even taller here tonight than he had at the bar. He looked down into the .45's barrel and grinned broadly. Father Vitor spoke.
I've brought him to you as requested, Master.
What? I turned and shot him a look of outrage, but he only gazed lovingly at his true patriarch. You goddamn... Suddenly, the man was right in front of me, his strong hands upon my shoulders, rubbing affectionately. He smelled of burnt copper. I looked up into his smiling face, but he pulled me to his chest in a firm, fatherly embrace. He felt warm and dry and safe.
You've done all that I asked of you, Johnny. Made me very proud. Everything you've done was according to my design.
I was too immersed in dread fear to say anything in response. He continued to hold me close to him, but I could sense that we were moving. My feet were walking on their own to stay near him as we approached the river's edge.
You're going to succeed Belial, Johnny. You'll be my favorite son now.
As he said it, I knew I'd never desired anything so strongly in my life. I was dimly aware of a single gunshot somewhere very far away. Immediately following the harsh crack, the man let go of me and took a few steps back. He held up his right hand, looking at it with mild curiosity. There was a black hole, a second iris in the eye, directly in the center of the palm where the bullet had passed through. I looked down to see the literal smoking gun in my hand. The spell was momentarily broken.
Master!
Shouted Father Vitor. I screwed up my courage, raised the beer can high, and swung it low in an arc, dashing holy water on the man. There was fierce hissing in the places of his palm where the water made contact. His face twisted into deep crimson rage, filled with hatred of a purity unattainable by mortal man. He emitted a roar of pain and fury that shook the very storm clouds from the sky. It took every fiber of resolve I could muster to remain where I stood and keep swinging the can at him. The blessed elixir splashed out in agonizingly small doses. Each new spray burned at the skin of his hands and face, but it didn't seem effective enough. The man was writhing and bellowing and smoking anger and pain, but I could feel the can getting lighter, and he showed no sign of dropping. I caught a peripheral glimpse of Father Vitor rushing in to attack and easily sidestepped his blow, tripping him as he charged. Acting on instinct, I fell upon the priest and shoved the can's aluminum nozzle into his mouth, forcing him to drink what was left. He began to cough and retch as the last drops of holy water coursed down his throat. Then I felt a strong hand grip the front of my shirt and pull me off of him, lifting me high up in the air. The man punched the can into the field and then lowered me so our faces were level, though my legs dangled freely 2 feet above the ground. It seemed that his already impressive height had increased since I'd broken from his arms. I raised the gun, but he snatched it and tossed it into the river. His tattooed hand twisted my shirt in its strong grip, and he pulled my face to within an inch of his. His breath smelled of sulfur.
Some boys just need a little more discipline.
He tossed me with a casual gesture. I flew back 20 feet, landing painfully on my neck on the wet riverbank. I looked up to see the massive man walking toward me, his calm, masculine anger invoking deeply repressed fears from childhood. A streak of lightning highlighted his outline. Behind the man, I saw Father Vitor stand up. He looked at his master in awed fear, then shot me a look of sympathy. The man unbuckled his belt and slid it free as he approached. I stood up, my knees trembling almost comically.
Father! There must be something of your faith left, otherwise you wouldn't have been able to bless the water. Help me now!
The man snapped two lengths of his belt together. The sonic boom it created knocked me backward into the river. I struggled to stand quickly and waded out further, seeking an escape that I knew to be impossible. The man stepped directly off the riverbank into the swift current. I risked a look over my shoulder and saw him closing the space between us with each stride. There were fresh burns from the holy water on his face and his outstretched right hand.
Father!
I shouted to Vitor. He stood now, watching from the muddy bank.
Father, help me! Bless the river water!
He adopted a bewildered expression.
Bless the river? A priest can't conduct sacrament on so much water at once. And besides, it's in motion.
I felt the sting of the belt leather on my Adam's apple. Then the moment of painful asphyxiation as it dragged me backward. I fell to the riverbed, swallowing huge gulps of water. My hand closed on something hard and metal among the submerged rocks. The man hauled me up, gasping and struggling for breath. Even through the commotion in the river and the noise of the rain, I heard Father Vitor's clear voice carrying from the bank.
Oh, water, creature of God, I exorcise you in the name of God the Father Almighty and in the name of Jesus Christ, his Son, our Lord, and in the power of the Holy Spirit.
The man turned from me and shot him a look of disappointment.
You turn from me so quickly, boy. I'll have to deal with you, next.
Father Vitor's incantation faltered.
Don't stop, Father! Please!
I screamed and pulled up Belial's gun. With a roar, I pressed the muzzle to the man's throat and squeezed the trigger. Nothing happened.
Tisk, tisk. Wet gun jammed. You're going to need some severe punishment, boy.
The eye in his hand slapped me hard. Sent me splashing back 10 feet. I struggled to remain upright. The water was significantly deeper where I landed. I heard Father Vitor's tremulous voice speak out again.
I exorcise you so that you may put to flight all the powers of the enemy.
The man laughed a terrible, inhuman laugh. Even as he spoke to his wayward priest, his eyes remained fixed upon mine.
Your holy water may have stung me, Padre, but you have no real power to do me any harm.
You're wrong, asshole. Heard it directly from the bad feelings themselves. Father Vitor is the one prophesied to blind the eye. All amusement drained from his face.
And be able to root out and supplant that enemy with his apostate angels, through the power of our Lord Jesus Christ, who will come to judge the living and dead in the world by Lyra. Amen.
Vitor finished and waved the sign of the cross. A streak of lightning seemed to have struck the running river directly in front of me. There was a brilliant flash, followed by a great explosion of water. My eyelids fluttered, I felt my body growing numb, and suddenly the river's fast current seemed too strong a thing to resist. I knew I had to swim to the safety of the shore, knew I'd never make it. I was aware of a strong hissing noise and great deal of steam. And then the bellowing began. Oh God, it was the last thing I heard before the dark current of unconsciousness swept me away. I came to, tangled in the gnarled branches of a tree growing out of the riverbank. The viaduct and the field were nowhere in sight. I was slow to realize that I had been shaken back to wakefulness by a strong hand on my shoulder. Father Vitor stood leaning out to me from the muddy shoreline.
I felt relieved to see his smile, which now showed the benevolence that you'd expect in holy men. It was then I noticed the denim blue sky of early morning overhead. The storm clouds had finally dispersed.
Come on, Johnny. Let's get the fuck out of here.
With Vitor's help, I climbed back onto solid land. As I tried to shake some of the damp out of my clothes, my body remembered just how sore and beat up it felt. Father Vitor and I found our way out to a dirt road, and he led us from there. We walked in silence, taking what appeared to be a roundabout way through the town toward his church. The dirt eventually turned to cracked pavement beneath our feet. I was about to question the indirect route when I noticed a dilapidated shack nestled amidst the tall weeds and grass to my left. A faded sign next to a broken stained glass window at the building read, "Emil and Eddie's Bar." But two parts of the letter M had broken away, causing it to resemble a capital V. The ampersand had also long ago dropped from the board and never been replaced. The rusted hulk of a powder blue Cadillac rusted in decay not far from the ruined shack. I hurried to catch up with Father Vitor. The priest finally spoke as we drew near to his church.
Every priest in seminary secretly dreams of banishing demons, though few would admit it.
He lit a cigarette, shielding the disposable Bic with his hand.
I have been a lost man. Thank you.
I shook my head. You saved my ass twice, Padre. I should be the one saying thanks. We crossed the remaining distance and entered the churchyard where last night I'd been drawn by the tolling bells. So I guess I'll just... I began, but saw that he'd frozen in the walkway. His face as white as the paint flakes. I followed his gaze. After a moment, saw what had drained his color. An eye had been drawn in blood on the front door. Rivulets of glistening red had trickled down from the image, spreading into the pattern I'd seen in the man's tattoo, and later on my own wrist. Fighting back the icy dread, I bounded up the steps and touched the mark. Dry. Comprehension dawned, and I exhaled deeply in relief. Don't scare me like that, Padre. This is from me. This is the mark I made on the door when I got here last night. The gray horror held fast on Vitor's face a moment longer, then scattered like thunderheads before the sun. He grinned and shook his head, chuckling out cigarette smoke.
Sorry, still a little jumpy.
Understandable. I opened the church door and walked in. It smelled faintly of cheap perfume and beer inside. Was there a flitter of movement by the confessional? I looked another moment, but no one was there. Vitor seemed oblivious. Someone seemed to have refilled the holy water basin since we'd left last night. But was the water supposed to be yellow? It hadn't been last night. Both containers looked to have been filled with piss. Or flat beer. I ran over to one and sniffed it. Nothing. I dipped my fingertips and smelled them. Still nothing. Maybe it was just the bronze of the basin, or...
Christ's hands!
Vitor gasped.
His stigmata bleed in the shape of eyes.
I followed his gaze to the cheaply sculpted crucified Christ above the altar. I walked slowly up the aisle, saw the painted blood on his chipped ceramic palms. But the trickle looked normal to me, like any other crucifix I had ever seen. A moment later, Vitor shook his head and pinched the bridge of his nose.
Sorry. Never mind.
Damn it, Padre! A rumbling engine dopplered closer outside. Loud 1950s gospel music blaring from a car stereo as it passed by. I bolted for the church doors, flung them open, but too late. The car was gone, its music and engine fading into the distance. I closed the door quickly again, stood leaning against it. We looked at each other now, ready to join in mutual self-conscious, self-deprecating laughter
at our paranoia. But in his mud-brown eyes, I only saw fear, his fear, and my own, spreading dangerous ideas like viral preachers threatening to stage a coup and overthrow rational thought. We both began to speak aloud. There's nothing going on here.
Nothing.
We're both just tired.
Exhausted. Drained.
Mind's playing tricks on us.
Jumping at shadows.
Obviously.
We blinded the eye.
The evil is dead.
Doornail.
The man is gone.
Exorcised.
Shut up.
Water blessed. Prophecy fulfilled.
Shut up! Shut up! I knew this last bit was my own voice. It echoed a few moments longer around the small church's ceiling. I sat down heavily in the priest's pew. Vito dropped his smoke on the tiled floor, stamped it out with a trembling foot.
What the fuck do we do now, Johnny?
Before I could respond, the wooden bench creaked next to me. I sensed a presence there. Felt it. Heard it. Smelled it. Tasted it. As clearly as I had when riding in Belial's blue caddy. As clearly as I had when drinking Pepsi in the booth at Evil Eddie's. With a start, I jumped out into the aisle, breathing in short, ragged gasps. The pew was empty. The panic had now assumed almost total control. I had to fight to keep from hyperventilating. Peter and I looked at each other yet again, neither of us wanting to say it aloud. This will never be over. This will never be over. What do we do now? Thank you for listening to Creature of God by Jack Mangan, with the voice talents of Heather Welliver, Craig Stepp, John Smarr, Matt Wallace, J.C. Hutchins, Chris Lester, Seth Harwood, Neil Stringer, Scott Sigler, and Rick Stringer. We will have more about them in our MySpace and LiveJournal pages. To find out more about Variant Frequencies, please go to our website at www.variantfrequencies.com. If you like Variant Frequencies, tell your friends about us. Thank you. From the Variant Frequencies team, Matt Wallace, Ann Stringer, and Rick Stringer.
This is Michael Connelly, author of The Brass Verdict, and I'm listening to Seth Harwood's Crime Wave at CRIMEWAV.com.
Thank you for calling the Sci-Fi Hotline. How can I help you?
I just can't take it anymore.
Sir, remain calm. We're here to help. What's the problem?
There are so many of them. It's overwhelming. I can't make up my mind. I think they're watching me, blooding or something. I don't know.
Sir, this is very important. Where are you?
Why me? No.
Sir, where are you?
At the bookstore.
Are you in the science fiction and fantasy section?
Yeah, by the new releases.
Listen very carefully. Do you have an MP3 player?
Yeah, but...
Turn it on.
Okay.
Now click on Adventures in Sci-Fi Publishing.
But which one? There are so many.
The newest one, man. Just click on it.
Okay. Yes, that's helping.
Feeling better?
Overwhelmed by too many good science fiction and fantasy novels? Turn to the experts. Turn to Adventures in Sci-Fi Publishing at adventuresinscifipublishing.com.
Is this your idea of Christian music? Yeah, me neither. Let's try a little head noise.
Invest your money, run rat race. You've got deep lines in your face. Less from all you love taste.
So tune in to JT's Indie Christian Music Podcast at www.jtindie.com.